Blog Talk Radio.
This is for you, Kings fans, wherever you may be. All the frustration and disappointment of the past is gone.
Good evening, everyone. It is January 18th, 2017, and it is time for the third episode of the Jewelcast this year. Three. Yeah, we're a little behind. But thankfully, we've got a lot to talk about, not least because we've had five different games with the San Jose Sharks this year. And two of them went all right, but we're going to be talking about all of them, as well as the other, 40, 45 games we've gotten to this year. So I'm going to go ahead and let Jake onto the Jewelcast. Jake, you there?
Yeah. Wow. I didn't realize we were going to be talking about that much stuff. I'm going to need to pour another beer. Hold on one second. How long do we have?
It's a Kings podcast. It's a Kings podcast.
I'm just saying. But, right. So, okay. Well, oh, sorry. So two beers? All right. Two, three beers.
I rolled with whiskey for this one, so it's that
kind
of night.
I've also got whiskey. Yeah, I was being facetious. It's too late to have beer. I need whiskey to stay awake.
Well, do what works for you. I actually just got home from Staples about 20 minutes ago, so I'm very refreshed. I'm wearing pajamas, and I feel good. I feel better than I did an hour ago.
I just got home from work, so I guess I feel similarly better than I did an hour ago. I mean, for a different reason, obviously, but, you know, work, watching a team lose a hockey game, that's a similar crappy feeling.
Yeah, yeah.
It's similar, you know? I can relate.
Yeah, you're gonna be on the high a little bit longer, though, I think.
Right, no, I agree.
You did get to catch the whole thing, right?
Yeah, I did. Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, I was at work. I wasn't working, clearly. I was watching a hockey game, but I was at work.
Sorry, we'll edit this part out when we send a copy to your employer.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I'm sure that they're regular listeners to the Jewelcast.
Mm-hmm.
Suck it!
We have plenty of regular listeners. In fact, I think one of them asked for a shout out in exchange for listening from Michigan. So, we'll take care of that right now. Boucher. Well, it sounds like Boucher. So, Boucher, thanks for listening. Everyone else who's listening at 11:34 Pacific, you're all great, really. If you're listening on iTunes, you're still great. But, now if you are listening live, then you get the chance to get the first takes from both me and Jake about tonight's game. So consider that a useful reward.
Yep. Hot take bonus. Fresh.
Jake, what did you think? What did you think of the Sharks tonight? We'll start with the Sharks.
I thought they played really well. Yeah, I thought they played really well. I was pleasantly, I don't know if surprised is the right word, but I thought they played, I thought they played really well, especially without having Couture in the lineup and, no Donskoy and obviously no Tomas Hertl. They played really well, especially in possession. I kind of thought this might be a game where they'd have to kind of, weather the storm a little bit in terms of possession. But, I was pretty impressed with how they played. I thought they really took the possession game to the Kings, and I was impressed by that, less impressed by how many penalties they took, but I thought thought they looked pretty good overall. So, you know, I'd say happy with the effort. So, and the fact that most of the penalties were taken by fourth liners is at least, you know, that's kind of what you expect them to, you know, you figure if anyone's going to have to take the penalties, at least it was those guys and not, you know, the guys you expect more from.
Yeah, and they got a goal, so you can, well,
right,
I know
exactly.
That probably condemns Michael Haley to the lineup a little bit more, but you can let him off.
No, he's going to be there anyway. It's all right. He's a regular
yeah.
now.
He's earned it.
He's earned it. What, he got another primary point. You see that sauce on that pass? Come on. Why wouldn't you have a guy like that in the lineup, a guy that can pass like that?
Yeah, and as much as I want to talk about the various odd man rushes and defensive breakdowns for LA, which I think was what we were getting the most anguish about, at least on the Jules timeline, every time I walk away from a Sharks game, I just want to talk about Brent Burns. And like tonight, this isn't the first Sharks game that I've seen in person, but he was just like, I don't think I took my eyes off him at a single point when he was on the ice. Like he's the Norris front runner right now. He's leading the Sharks in goals and assists and points. Am I crazy for thinking that he's like twice as good as he was last year, or is it just a gradual progression that everyone's noticing now?
Yeah, it really does feel like he's gotten better this year. I don't know. To me, it feels gradual because, you know, I'm watching him every game. And at first it kind of felt crazy when people started talking like, you know, oh man, it really feels like he's a Norris front runner this year. And to me, it felt at first like, well, I guess, I don't know. It feels like pretty much the same as last year, but you know, start looking at the numbers a little bit, and maybe start zeroing it in on it a little bit more. I was looking it up, during the game and coming into tonight. If you were to look at just defenders since 2000, the only defender, and this is guys who have played at least 40 games since 2000, who had more points per game in a season is Mike Green, I think, in 2009-10. Hmm. I was going to say pretty good company, although Mike Green has had those two great seasons and then, you know, basically died. So maybe not great company is
right.
The right word. But regardless, you know, it's basically unprecedented in the, you know, quote unquote remodern era, the post lockout era, whatever. So yeah, I mean, it really feels like he's just gotten even better this year than he was last year. And so it seems like, you know, the more time goes on, the less crazy, you know, the talk of him at least being in consideration for a, you know, a Hart nomination gets, especially if he keeps mm-hmm. playing like this. And to me, what makes it actually conceivable is that his defensive play has gotten a lot better. You know, I at least notice, you know, fewer defensive mistakes this year than I did in last year or the year before that. It definitely seems like, you know, even last year there would be a play a game or a play every couple games where it'd be like, oh yeah, there he goes making, you know, either a bad pinch mm-hmm. or a really weird defensive play where, you know, you just don't really understand why he's doing it type thing. And I'm not noticing that as much this year. So the fact that he's both generating more points and is playing better defensively, you know, I think that kind of backs up what you're saying, that he's playing really just a whole lot better this year than he was last year.
Yeah. And he, it's funny you mentioned the Mike Green thing, because that was sort of the weird era of Norris voting where no one really paid attention to the points. And now I know Doughty won last year with a subpar point total, but it seems like if you're not in the top, you know, five or whatever, top 10 in points, you're not even going to get a sniff. Whereas, you know, Green was far and away the scoring leader for a couple of years, but he also, I think, 2009-10, I'm pretty sure it was the year that Jeff Schultz had a plus 50 for Washington. So that team was just a juggernaut. But even like Erik Karlsson, the games that I've seen him in, it doesn't feel like he takes over the game the way Burns does sometimes. And I don't know how many shot attempts Burns had tonight, and I'm going to check because I'm just curious, but it felt like a barrage from our end at least, and That's probably because the the second period he was shooting towards us, and just with the special teams play and the 4-on-4 coming so often, Burns kind of had his pick of where to shoot and seemed to be hitting his spots really consistently. Aside from that, though, I kind of forgot that Couture was out of the lineup, which I think speaks really well to how the Sharks played. Whereas the Kings, you know, they're missing one guy on offense who is Tyra Toffoli. And I spent the entire game thinking, oh, if he was just out there, what possible difference that could make. And in a way, like, being healthy is more important, I think, than anything else when you get to playoff time. And the Kings have a lot of time to recover in that respect, and the Sharks do too. But from what you saw tonight, do you think that the Kings are still in one of the top teams in the Pacific, or do you think they're going to be struggling to make the playoffs?
I don't think they're going to struggle to make the playoffs necessarily, but I do think they're going to struggle to do anything once they get there, just because I think they're going to really struggle to score. But I thought that was going to be tough. I didn't think it was going to be tough last year, because I still thought that they, you know, were good enough that they could lock down and win games defensively. But now I really feel like, you know, they just don't have enough scores. And I thought that, you know, during the offseason when they, you know, went out and got Teddy Purcell, I thought, okay, maybe they're going to try and maybe get some depth guys and try and maybe Daryl Sutter is going to actually let his team play offense. And the fact that, you know, obviously he never really even got a shake with the lineup is concerning to me. And I don't know. The more I watch, and I watch the Kings play relatively regularly because I live in Southern California, and so I, you know, watch them on cable, you know, pretty regularly. And, you know, it kind of makes me wonder if they miss the playoffs this year, though, if this is, you know, a good time to end the Daryl Sutter era and kind of get a guy in here who's going to actually, you know, dress an offensive lineup. Because, you know, it's one of those things, if you look at the Kings, and while they've obviously had a lot of success playing a really defensive lineup for years, you know, one thing that stayed consistent throughout Daryl Sutter's time with the Kings is that they've had a really low shooting percentage. And it kind of makes me wonder, it's like, well, maybe it's time to get someone in there that's going to play a little more offensively, because, you know, the way the roster's composed right now, I kind of wonder if they're going to be able to, you know, to compete moving forward. I mean, it feels like something needs to change, and whether that's going to be in, you know, roster makeup or something's going to have to give here. And I don't know, maybe there's something that can be done at the trade deadline, and I don't know what that is, because I know that there's a lot of big contracts on this team that are going to be probably tough to move. And if, you know, Sutter's not willing to move guys around in the lineup and upset the kind of the balance in that lineup now, then I don't really know what the answer is. So I don't know. It's kind of a tough situation. It's a tricky situation to be in. That being said, you know, you talk about tough contracts to move. We live in a world where a lot of really where David Clarkson got traded, so anything is possible.
Yeah, and hey, Gabrick scored again tonight, so maybe he's going to be
true.
Trade bait.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe they go get Gabriel Landeskog. It seems like if the Avalanche really lose their mind, you never know. That team's ripe for the picking.
I mean, the Kings are getting thrown into that conversation quite a bit by your various sources of rumors. I think.
That just doesn't think it makes sense, right? Because if the Avalanche are frustrated with their scores, Kings need scores, then, you know, that's just one of those things where it's like it's a natural rumor, and I wonder if there's anything actually, you know, to it beyond
right, and
the fact that it just makes logical sense. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and everyone's like, Colorado's apparently sent scouts to the AHL or the Ontario Reign games recently, and they've clearly been keeping an eye on the Kings. So it's you know, it's one of those things where there's definitely smoke. I don't know if there's fire, but the consensus seems to be that, you know, they're not going to be able to make that trade without either giving up, you know, a couple of their really good defensive prospects, whether that's Cale Klig, who just had a pretty good showing for Canada at the World Juniors, or Paul LeDoux, who's generally considered the best, you know, Ontario prospect, but neither of those guys are, you know, slam dunks. Like if you're talking about Brandon Carlo in Boston, who keeps getting thrown into these things. And Dean Lombardi, I just don't see him trading Jake Muzzin or Alec Martinez unless, you know, he gets desperate. But he hasn't traded a core player like that in years now because he's been so set on keeping this core intact. And I don't mind it so much. I think it's still a reasonably well-constructed team, but it was also the type of team where one forward injury was going to cause anguish on offense again. And now the Kings have played almost the entire season without one of Gabrick or Kopitar to Foley in their lineup. And as soon as you pull one of those guys out, you start wondering where the goals are going to come from.
Right. Well, I mean, the biggest problem there to me is that they signed, I mean, they have Marion Gabrick to this really excessively long deal. And Gabrick's a guy that's always kind of liable to be out of the lineup. And that's kind of a scary, scary thing, obviously. But I mean, you know, that's a team that's constructed around a lot of long-term deals. And so they need to have, you know, a lot of depth guys contribute, and they just haven't really gotten that. And I think, again, that's what, to me, is what goes back to the fact that they have some of these, the depth guys that they're using are not useful. You know, I mean, I think, I would be interested to hear what you think. I mean, I think Setoguchi has been decent as a depth guy, but I mean, aren't they still playing like Andy Andreoff every once in a while? And, you know, I mean, Kyle Clifford is still playing and he's on a long-term deal. And who's the other terrible guy? Is Jordan Orland terrible? It's him, right? That's terrible. So,
he's certainly,
I mean,
on the Andreoff and Clifford tier, yeah.
Right. I mean, it just seems to me that they should have other guys on the Reign or somewhere, because the Reign are a very good AHL team. So there should be guys at least knocking on the door at this point that should be getting at least a look if the team is struggling this much to score, you know. And the fact that guys just aren't even getting much of a long-term look is, you know, I don't know if troubling is the right word, but, you know, like, seems like at some point somebody's got to, you know, there's got to be some shuffling happening to try to jumpstart something, you would think.
Yeah, it's an interesting situation because the, like you said, the Reign, you know, they have been good. And, you know, the Reign definitely have some of those, you know, those tweener guys that probably aren't ever going to make an impact in the NHL. Their leading scorer is TJ Hensick, who is 31 years old, but they do have, you know, some decent prospects down there. They had Michael Mersch, who came up briefly last year. They have Johnny Brodzinski, who moved from the NCAA into the AHL and is pretty, he's more of a pure scorer than I think anybody else they have down there. And, you know, a couple other guys that are still 2 years away. And that's the biggest problem, is that when you're picking, you know, at the end of the first round or in the second round, as opposed to that, you know, the top 15 or even the top 20, which they could have had a chance to do a couple times and traded the pick. And I've said, you know, repeatedly that I didn't mind the Andre Sequeira trade. I didn't even mind the Milan Lucic trade that much. I don't mind going all in to try and win when you have a good core and when you have all the pieces there. The problem is just that, you know, when Lucic left, they weren't able to adequately replace him because, you know, Teddy Purcell was the replacement, and great in Ontario, but he did next to nothing while he was in LA, and I don't know if he's going to get back up. So the dedication to the fourth liners has been, you know, survivable for a while, but you're right. It's getting to the point where Jordan Nolan had one of his best months with the Kings ever last month. And still, it's not to the point where he's anything more than, you know, a fourth liner, even when he's excelling. And you're seeing teams that are able to ice guys in their fourth line that are scoring. And Jordan Nolan has 5 points in 35 games. And it's not fair to pick on him because he's probably been better than Andy Andreoff this year. And he's been comparable to Kyle Clifford. But you're right. It's just not there for those bottom six guys right now. And if you don't have a complete top six, then that's going to stick out a lot more.
Right. I mean, I guess my thing is that, you know, as someone who's seen the Rain play now three times this year, you know, guys that have stuck out to me, guys like, I mean, you know, like, I get it. Like, you know, Hensick is probably a career AHL guy, but a guy like Brodzinski or a guy like Mersch, you know, those guys, I looked it up on the AHL website right now. Brodzinski has got, you know, 0.71 points per game. Mersch is 0.68. That's around the level that you want to see from guys around that age. You know, that's pretty close to, you know, to good enough. It's a little low.
Yeah.
But, I mean, if you're talking about a guy like, you know, Jordan Nolan getting playing time, a guy who's a career, like, you know, 0.15 a game player, you know, like, it's time, you know. It is time to change things up. It's one of those things. And to me, that's always been, as much as I think that, you know, Dean Lombardi and Daryl Sutter obviously don't deserve a lot of credit for building the team that that they built, there's like every coach and like every general manager, there are obviously blind spots there. And I feel like it's been strange that I haven't heard more of an outcry or anything that, you know, like, hey, maybe it's time to change something up, to try something else, to kind of spark some offense here. It just kind of seems like it's the same old thing. And I kind of wonder, like, at what point, you know, what's the tipping point here? You know, after tonight, the Kings are 8 points behind the Sharks in the standings. The Sharks are in third place in the division. You know, given how bad the Western Conference is, or, you know, it's point-wise anyway, that's certainly not, like, the end of the world. The Kings are still in the playoffs and, you know, quite frankly, not really in a huge danger to drop out of it, given the way that the Central Division is, like, absolutely committed to not make the playoffs.
Sure.
But, you know, I mean, I don't want to speak for you or, you know, you guys aren't thinking about, like, just making the playoffs. You know, you want to kind of win when you get there. So it's like, hey, how about, like, having a team that's clicking once you get there, you know? So it seems like there should be a plan to get the team to be as good as it can be, you know, once we get to March and April.
Yeah. And it's getting to the time of the year where the Kings would normally make that kind of move. You know, in 2014, they call up Tanner Pearson. Well, I think they called up Tanner Pearson at least for the last time near the end of February, beginning of March. 2012, they call up Dwight King and Jordan Nolan, who had Jordan Nolan, I don't think, had even played a game, and King had like a cup of coffee a few years ago. They called them up in February. So it's definitely not off the Kings' radar to do something like that. And, you know, if they... You know, they're playing 9 of their next 10 games on the road. And if they go through a 3 or 4 game skid, that might be the point where they call up Mersch. Maybe they think about Brodzinski. I mean, Mersch is 24. Brodzinski is 23. They're not like, you know, fresh-faced guys with no experience. They've paid their dues, at least in the NCAA, and they've shown that they can contribute in the AHL. So it's, you know, maybe it's abiding their time kind of thing. Maybe the Kings still haven't, and maybe this is because of the Central's weakness and because of the weakness of the bottom of the Pacific, they still haven't reached the point where they're really desperate. But it's, you know, 2 years ago, they hung around that 8th, 9th seed the entire year, and then suddenly they were outside on the last day of the season.
Is there any concern about the expansion draft? I mean, about any of those guys getting taken?
Yeah, there's an interesting logjam now.
Right?
Oh, the AHL guys?
I mean, right?
Like,
or I guess not,
yeah,
because
I
haven't actually played enough, right? Because I guess that's how...
Right.
Okay, right.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the bigger concern
Mersch
for...
Mersch can be taken, though, right? I think Brodzinski, Tampa, Mersch can be taken, I think.
I didn't know
if that was,
you know,
a
I don't
concern.
Know. I don't know off the top of my head, but yeah, I don't think he'd be the guy though.
Okay.
Because the Kings are either gonna protect 3 defensemen, and 7 skaters, and then if they do that, they lose. Well, they probably lose Derek Forbert or Braden McNabb, or they're gonna protect 4 defensemen, and one of those two guys is on the hook. And that's sort of the big expansion question for the Kings right now, is which fourth defenseman do they protect? Because honestly, you know, you've seen the forward core. If they lose anybody from that set of forwards, it's either going to be a bad contract or a bottom six guy. So not someone who's as important to the team as a potential top four defenseman. So I think they're probably clear, especially since there are a number of other teams with more appealing young prospects than the Kings. I think I was reading about the it was your TSN or Sportsnet had their rankings of like the best under 24 cores of each NHL team, and the Kings came in dead last because they literally didn't have a single player under 24 in the NHL.
Wow. Yeah, they don't. Good Lord.
Yeah, and it's, and again, it's, you know, it's the price to pay for being a team that goes all in to win every year. And the, I think the Blackhawks were in the bottom five too, but
Well, teams that have already won, as opposed to teams that are still trying to get to the point where you've already won, right? I get it, yeah. But yeah, Jesus, exactly. Yeah, wow, that's wild.
Yeah,
I mean, it's
and,
still
and
pretty
unfortunately,
rare, even for teams that have just won. I mean, even the Blackhawks have a guy under 24, and that's, you know, the Blackhawks.
Yeah, yeah, and unfortunately, Michael Mersch is injured right now too. He suffered a lower body injury, so he might have missed the window there. Yeah, he the quote was, "We're not talking day to day on the injury." So
Okay.
So
great.
If the reinforcements are coming, it's either Brodzinski or it might be. I mean, it could be like an Adrian Kempe, but he's, you know, he hasn't been scoring. He's been scoring goals, but the points haven't come quite as much. I'd be surprised if they didn't try to call a Purcell and sneak him through waivers at some point. It's just, you know, sometimes you just have to change the recipe, right?
Yeah, I kind of wonder if he would make it through waivers this second time through. I was, frankly, kind of surprised he made it through waivers the first time through, maybe because it was early through the season that, you know, is why he made it. But I don't know. I mean, I'd be surprised if
he
made it
really
back
reluctant
through waivers
for
the second time. Yeah, I don't know. I guess we'll see. I mean, it seems like now, since the teams are so reluctant to actually make trades because of, you know, the expansion draft, I'd be surprised if he made it all the way through the second time around. But, you know, who knows?
Yeah, and the teams are talking about, or at least having to think about, making moves specifically to make sure they don't lose somebody for free in the expansion draft. So it's
right.
Kind of weird that, you know, it's preventing them from moving guys, but at the same time, you know, it's part of the strategy. And that's why people are wondering now if the Kings are going to try and get, like, a Gabriel Landeskog or a bigger name forward. You know, do they expose, or do they try to trade McNabb, or do they try to trade, you know, Nick Dowd, or someone that's not going to be protected but might be appealing to a team that wants a cheap guy that they can fill in the lineup? Are the Sharks facing any decisions like that?
Well, the Sharks are probably going to lose a defender, or almost certainly will. You know, the Sharks right now really have a really deep defensive group and are really kind of, you know, overcrowded in that area. So my guess is that they're going to lose, you know, somebody like Brendan Dillon, something like that, because he's young and on a pretty good contract. So, you know, my guess is that they'll go the, you know, protect the, you know, more defenders route, because they don't have to protect Joe Thornton or Patrick Marleau, you know, because they're both on expiring contracts. So they'll do the, you know, protect, you know, Couture and Pavelski and Hurdle, and, you know, then protect just Burns and Vlasic and Braun. The biggest decision they'll have to make is, you know, protecting, I think they'll protect, you know, David Schlemko, but they'll probably lose one of, you know, they've got Brendan Dillon, Mirko Mueller, Tim Heed, and Dylan DeMello. They'll have to make a decision there about those guys, and that'll be kind of interesting. I'm not really sure what they're going to decide to do there. I would probably, you know, I don't know. I really don't have any great insight on what they're going to do there, because Tim Heat is kind of an interesting prospect type guy. That's a guy they signed as a free agent out of Sweden, who's, you know, 25 but can score just an absolute crap ton. Mirko Mueller is a guy they took in the first round that they traded up for. He's only 21, but, you know, maybe they're not as high on as they used to be. I think that they leave Brendan Dillon exposed because he's 26 and gets paid a little bit more than those other guys and leaves them with more cap flexibility. So, you know, maybe they protect either a Tim Heat, or they might actually decide to protect another forward in like Chris Tierney, somebody like that. Yeah, who knows? Because, you know, the reality is, you know, as much as they're going to say they're not, the reality is they'll probably re-sign both Joe Thornton and Patrick Marleau to 2-year handshake deals, and, you know, they'll just pretend that they're not doing that.
Yeah.
That'll be – it's the NHL, you know. I mean, we know what happens here.
Yeah, you reward people.
Right.
And I'm looking at the TSN expansion predictions, and they predicted that Matt Nieto would be the player taken from San Jose. So,
can you believe that? I know that.
Yeah,
we're
going to have to rethink that one.
Yeah, I mean, that's so stupid. I just that's bad, man. I don't get that at all.
I'm almost disappointed on your behalf.
I know.
I'm missing the Long Beach jokes already.
Yeah, I'm disappointed. I've been. He scored his first goal for Colorado. On Tuesday.
So, first goal
of the season. Good for him. Good for him. He gets to live in Denver though. It's a great city. A much better city than San Jose. So.
Yeah, you sacrifice the team quality, but you get to live
up
there.
That's true.
So.
It's a much, much, much worse team. So that's. But he gets to play now.
Yeah, the Denver Post would like you to know that Matt Nieto fits in nicely with the Colorado Avalanche and that he's on a 2-game point streak.
Wow. A 2-game point streak. Good for him. Nice. Now, whether or not he ends up there again next year, who knows? But he will be on an NHL team next year. He'll be somewhere. Maybe when Winnipeg moves back to Atlanta next year, he'll be there.
Yeah, given the way that it looks like he's playing with Duchesne and Landeskog right now. So I don't know whether that means
he's
certainly
safe or
not,
traded
but...
in for some much, much better teammates than he was playing with in San Jose. So I don't know. This might be the best thing that's ever happened to Matt Nieto. I'm going to be honest.
Yeah.
I don't really feel bad for him at all.
If he can survive the rebuild, I mean,
he might
it's going to take a while for
shape.
Colorado. But yeah.
Well, especially because it sounds like they don't actually think they're rebuilding. So.
You're talking about trading everyone to players. That's a rebuild.
I thought that they were rebuilding at the beginning of the year, and then somebody told me, "Oh no, they're trying to win," and that was a big surprise to me. So
yeah.
I was like, so they're doing that, huh? Okay.
Well,
it's not going great. I saw that play against the Calgary Flames when I was in Denver, and that is one of the most fun, terrible hockey games I've ever seen. Those are not two good hockey teams. Calgary was the much better team, to give you a frame of reference for how bad the Colorado Avalanche are.
Well, the Kings are now fighting the Flames for... a playoff spot, assuming that the Canucks don't continue to like play at a near playoff pace. And if they make the playoffs ahead of the Kings, then I will officially go on the record as asking to fire everyone. Not just everyone in the Kings, but everyone on every team that finished underneath the Canucks.
That's fair. Yeah. I'm into that. Yeah. I mean, the Canucks are what, like, I think their goal differential is, like, minus 15 or something. So I'm pretty confident in saying Canucks are a very, very, very bad hockey team.
Let's take a look. Yeah, they are minus 18, and the Kings are
even.
But the Canucks, the Kings have a game in hand, but the Canucks and the Kings are currently tied in the standings. So it's just one of those things where, you know, I'm going to go outside and scream off my balcony, if I had a balcony. I'll scream out a window for a while.
It's like a balcony. It's got
injustice.
That little staircase thing. That's why it's balcony.
Yeah, it's a ledge.
It's a poor man's balcony.
I shouldn't call it a ledge, because that's...
Oh, yeah, that's...
Yeah. But
it's not that bad. It's only January. Yeah. Jesus.
Yeah. It's fine, really. I've been through worse.
We're fine. Yeah.
Although I'm looking now at goal differentials because you piqued my curiosity. And the first wild card team in the East is the New York Rangers, who have a +35 goal differential.
Wow.
And the first wild card team in the West is the Calgary Flames, who have a -3.
Remember when the Western Conference
yeah.
used to be good?
I do. I hardly remember.
Better time, a simpler time. Do you want to hear an interesting NHL scheduling fact? This is in an ongoing series, which is the NHL doesn't know how to schedule things. So you may know the Sharks and Kings played for the very last time tonight in the regular season. Well, the Sharks and Canucks have yet to play this season. They're going to play five times this year. Their first game against one another is February 2nd. So in case you were wondering how much the Sharks and Kings are going to hate each other, they play five times between February 2nd and April 4th. So that can only go well, for sure.
I envy you, because Vancouver is going to be in a free fall sooner rather than later.
I just worry about what Joe Thornton's going to do after, you know, the Canucks have gotten under his skin for four games in a row. By that fifth game, he's just going to be a ball of furry rage. Be suspended for three games in the playoffs.
Yeah, I'm gonna be pushing the Joe Thornton is dirtier than Dustin Brown narrative for the foreseeable future. Just so you know.
Okay. Yeah. Let me know how that goes.
I've already started.
Good luck, buddy.
I've already started.
Okay.
He's got a deeper suspension history. He speared a guy the other day.
Yeah.
Look, if I don't use my platform for
extolling the virtues
of Dustin Brown, then what would I use it for?
Certainly not to get rich, because no balcony.
I'm working my way up. I'm moving on up.
All rich people
to the
have balconies.
Balcony side of town.
That's case in point.
The loft, they're reconstructing the LA area. I work fairly close to the Staples Center, and I'm sure you've seen the couple times you've been down there. There are apartment buildings cropping up on every corner next to Staples now. And, you know, I can see them out the window, and I had to deal with jackhammering for a long time for the one across the street. And it's kind of nice to look out there, and, you know, it's a really nice, like, every single complex looks beautiful. The views are cool. The neighborhood is, you know, thriving. They're putting in new restaurants, and then you go up and you see how much the places actually cost, and you decide that where you're living now is okay.
Someday. Sweet, sweet smells of gentrification as far as the eye can see. Beautiful.
I'm just asking for a decent pizza place by my office. That's all I need.
Yeah. Brent Burns was not happy with the pizza delivered to Staples Center. So if you could get one over by there that it could deliver, that would be really helpful.
Yeah. Can you explain, because I don't know the full story of Brent Burns and pizza, and I know that he was making recommendations. So you can you go into that?
Sure. Yeah. So, well, the last time I was, I covered the Sharks Kings. That was the November 30th game. He was unhappy with the quality of the pizza in the Kings locker room, which I should note was almost certainly, in stadium pizza, which I think we both know means it was probably Aramark pizza, which I think we can both clearly state is not the fault of the Los Angeles Kings, but it's clearly because, you know, Aramark is one of the great evil empires of the world. Right. Yeah. It's not an opinion. It's a fact.
I'm not disagreeing.
Right. So I walk into the locker room, right? And, everybody swarms around Martin Jones. And I'm like, okay, right. I don't need to hear what a goalie thinks about anything because, you know, obviously. And so I see Brent Burns kind of standing over by himself with pizza in the back of the locker room. Like, oh, great. I got to ask him what he thinks about the pizza. And so I walk over there. And the first thing I hear is him talking to another reporter standing over there. He says, yeah, the pizza's crap, though. And I asked him, oh, so the pizza's not very good. He said, no, it's garbage. And I was like, oh, where's it from? and he kind of gestures towards the box over there. He says, I don't know, see it for yourself. And it's just kind of this, like, nondescript pizza box. And so the guy doesn't say anything on it. But, I asked him, so you don't have a place that you order it? Because I'm thinking, hey, man, if I'm making, you know, $6 million a year, I'm not eating the crap that they serve me from Staples Center. You know, I use some of that $6 million a year to order some because, you know, I'm not an idiot. Clearly, Brent Burns doesn't do that. He just like, it's like, oh, yeah, get me some pizza. And they just get him some pizza because, I don't know, whatever. Not using your money wisely. And so then I was like, okay, clearly this is going nowhere. So I asked him, oh, where do you have a place in San Jose? And he says, yeah. So he tells me the place in San Jose. And then I asked him where it's at. And so he tells me. Anyway, so long story short, I'm in San Jose this weekend. And so I went into the pizza place that he goes to. And I talked to the owner for a little bit. And so, yeah, I got to go to the pizza place that Brent Burns goes to. And do you want to know what Brent Burns gets on this pizza?
Absolutely.
I mean, so he gets, and I wish I was kidding, green bell peppers, sausage, and pineapple, which, so the guy tells me.
Okay,
that, whatever. Yeah, and so, like, I think, so, like, you know, we had just been talking or whatever, and we, you know, my brother and I are sitting there. We're at our table, and he's just standing behind the counter. It's a pretty small place. And, yeah, we're just kind of talking, and he just kind of, like, brings it up because, you know, I said, like, oh, yeah, you know, it came in because of Burns' recommendation. He said, oh, yeah, 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 you know, yo, you wrote that article on the website. You know, we had talked a little bit, whatever. And they said, oh, you know what his order is. And he's like, oh, yeah, he said something about pineapple. I said, yeah, and then he tells me what it is. I think he could kind of tell by our, like, you know, done silence. And there's kind of this really, you know, pregnant pause after he says it, and he just kind of waits, and he's like, yeah. Kind of a weird cat. Like, yeah, no shit. Like, yeah, no shit. Brent Burns is kind of a weird cat. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, good call, buddy. Yeah,
an
he
odd
sure
duck,
is.
If you will.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Ah, it's kind of a Brent
I,
Burns,
you know,
kind
I,
of a weird guy. Understatement of the year.
I expected to cringe a lot more at that order, but green bell pepper and sausage is my go-to, actually. And
oh, yeah.
I've also come around.
I'm not like anti anything on pizza. Like, you can get whatever you want. I'm just saying combining those flavors together is a little weird. That's
I don't
a
know.
Weird
I mean the green bell pepper is a, you know, not necessarily sweet, but it lends itself more towards that, and the pineapple accentuates it. And I don't know if it's a spicier sausage or a sweet sausage, but
I just think sausage and pineapple together is weird, man.
Yeah. I guess the bell pepper tries
to. If you do the bell pepper and the pineapple, okay. Or you do the bell pepper and the sausage, okay. But I think the sausage and the pineapple together is weird. That's really what I think is weird.
Yeah. I will vouch for pineapple and jalapeno, though. If you've ever had pineapple and jalapeno together,
yeah, no,
that is a fantastic.
I mean, I'm not usually a pineapple on pizza guy. That's not my go-to, but like I would say, yeah, that's like right. That's legit. Yeah, sure.
I was.
I could go for a pizza right now. Wow, that sounds great. With like a you had like a pineapple jalapeno pizza with like an IPA. Yeah, that would be legit.
Sure. No, it's interesting that Staples. Yeah, it's interesting that Staples gave them. Well, whatever, Aramark generic pizza, because they do now have a Blaze pizza, like one of those quick serve Blaze places. Yeah, the Chipotle of pizzerias is now in.
Yeah, I mean,
Staples
it's mediocre,
Center.
Obviously, but I'd much rather have that than, you know, generic Aramark crap.
Right, and the Chipotle of pizzerias is a bit of a compliment, because actually, out here, there's a Chipotle and a Blaze literally next door to each other, so, hey.
It's so LA, man.
Yeah,
or
extremely.
Maybe it's from California. Well, whatever. Anyway, it doesn't matter.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a Chipotle, Blaze, Jersey Mike's, Starbucks.
Right.
At
Jamba Juice somewhere around there.
Across
know.
The street, I want to say. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
Not far.
Yeah. Yep. So anyway,
cool.
It was a great experience. I guess Brent Burns orders from this place all the time. So yeah, pizza talk. Well, he loves pizza. It's a big thing for him.
Well,
eats it after every game.
I'll have to ask him, or we'll see if he has any other food recommendations at the All-Star game, because segue, next weekend he will be down in Los Angeles for the All-Star Game, along with many other of the best and brightest in the NHL. And
Jonathan
we'll
Tate
be there
will
for...
also be there.
man, I could spend the remaining 40 minutes talking about Jonathan Tate. I don't know if we're going to actually go for 40 more minutes, but we could.
If we're going to spend the rest of it dissing Jonathan Tate, I'm ready to go for 40 more minutes. Hold on. I'm ready.
All right. So I'm going to start with the NHL 100 because there are rumors that there are six active players on that list. There are also rumors, which I refuse to dignify, that Jonathan Toews got selected to this All-Star game because he's going to be on that list. The question that I have, and I was talking about this with my dad over a pregame meal today. There are some locks, but we were bringing up the idea of which guys might make the cut. Do you think Joe Thornton has a chance to be in that list?
Chance, but man, I would really be surprised. I really would be. I mean, especially because he didn't even make the All-Star team. You know, I mean, especially if those rumors were true, wouldn't they have named him the All-Star team too? I don't know. I mean, to me, I guess though, if you're thinking of the six active players, I mean, he'd probably be one of them, right?
It's hard to argue with it if they're going from a career sort of perspective because, you know, the number of active players now, you know, past Jagr, that really have sort of the counting numbers that have been playing for a very long time. You know, I'm not sure there are too many other guys that fit under that bill. I mean, Crosby and Ovechkin will obviously make the list. Jagr will make the list, and that leaves three more guys. And, you know, Toews does not deserve to make it over Thornton, but I think great, you're on Canada and Chicago and you want some stuff. Like, I'm not even going to talk about Toews anymore, but if Crosby and Jagr and Ovechkin are the givens, then, you know, maybe Thornton's on there. Malkin was a possibility. I don't know, Jerome McGinley, I guess. He's still active, right? So there are definitely other guys.
I even saw him score a hockey goal at the game I was at. It was incredible.
A hockey goal?
A hockey goal. As opposed to a non-hockey goal. I know. Yeah.
Although it was also fun to... I just searched Twitter for Thornton NHL 100 just to see. Brent Burns did say that Joe Thornton should be in the list. So take that for what it's worth. But interestingly,
fairness,
I'm now
Joe
getting.
Thornton said that. What did he say that? That something about like Brent Burns isn't just the best defender in the league; he's the best player in the league. Something like that. They're like best friends.
Oh wow!
Yeah, they're best bros, man. They hang out all the time.
Yeah, and I will admit that the beard barber commercial. Featuring both of them. Yeah, it was well done. I appreciate the I'd rather NHL players go for it in commercials than just sort of talk to the camera. Like if you're a bad actor,
really they're terrible actors, so they really gotta oversell it, you know, otherwise it's not gonna work.
Yeah. Yeah, my favorite
noting,
commercial.
Go ahead.
Oh, go ahead.
Hit me. Ready. Okay,
fine.
I was just gonna say the top active point. I know I'm going top players, active players, six in points is Jagr 1895, Thornton 1368, Iginla 1284, Hossa might be one 1117, Marlowe 1056. Is Patrick Elias still playing? They still have him listed as active on here. He's not playing this year, is he? No. He just hasn't officially retired. Ovechkin, 1,005.
Is he like Datsyuk, where he has a contract?
Yeah,
but...
I think so. And then, like, Sedin, 999, Crosby, 988, and then the other, Daniel Sedin, 967. So, Yeah, so I guess Thornton probably should get on there if they are doing that many active players.
Yeah, so. I think Thornton and Iggy both have cases, and, you know, Jágr will be on there, Crosby, Ovechkin.
I mean, yeah.
Hossa is an interesting one because, like, he's not even a surefire Hall of Famer, and that's, you know, I think actually everybody who was on the list so far is a Hall of Famer. Like, all 33 of the guys they put in from the pre-expansion era are Hall of Famers. So it's if you have to argue for your spot in the Hall of Fame, it might be difficult to make the list. But that won't stop the NHL from putting on a couple active Blackhawks, I think.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think Hossa has got to be a Hall of Famer, in my opinion, personally. But, I mean, I understand that people hate him, so I'm not really that surprised. So, it doesn't seem like people hate him a lot.
He's a traitor to everyone.
It's weird. I think if you play for Chicago, Detroit, and Pittsburgh, then...
That'll do
and
it.
And Atlanta.
I mean, if that doesn't do it, then, you know, I don't know what will. I mean, in fairness,
if people don't
hate
you after you play for those three teams, then you deserve to be in the Hall of Fame.
It's probably because you were terrible. So, yeah.
Yeah.
So, right. There you go. That's a good case for him getting in the Hall of Fame because people hate him after he played for all those teams. He must have been doing something right.
All right. I'm glad we checked that off. One debate settled forever.
Boom. Host the Hall of Famer. Done.
I think maybe I should have started talking because I was commenting on the commercial thing, and now it feels like a weird segue to go back. But I've been waiting for the opportunity to talk about the Bubble Hockey Kings commercial on a Jewel cast for a while. So the best Kings commercial of all time was when the Jack Johnson, Dustin Brown, and Andrei Kopitar are playing like toy bubble table hockey. And pretending to be the guys on the table and acting out different things they would do. So Johnson is destroying people and Kopitar is doing spin moves. And they completely go over the top with it and say, I'll save you, Brownie. Boom. And it kind of intercuts with video that doesn't really fit or is a little less enthusiastic than it should be. And it works so much better than every other, you know, I'm Andrei Kopitar and you're watching the NHL on Fox Sports West. It's just, I don't even care if you're not getting a point across to me or if you're not effectively selling what you're supposed to be selling. It's just show some life. That's all I ask for in my NHL player commercials.
Yeah, it's almost like players having fun is better than this like weird, awkward, forced machoism that the NHL tries to shove down our throats all the time. Who would have guessed?
Yeah.
Crazy.
Players in shadow all the time.
Yeah, it's,
so
yeah.
Why are they canceling the breakaway challenge?
You said it's weird. I don't know. I really have no idea. Do we have any, like, even a rumor as to why that's happening? Because I really have no idea.
I don't even believe the
NHL hates fun or whatever. Like, I mean, like, okay, yeah, right. I know that that's probably true in some, like, abstract form, but I don't really think that's why they're doing it. I mean, I don't know.
Well,
Did people not like it last year?
I mean, if you don't like Brent Burns, Chewbacca, and PK Subban, and Jágr, I don't understand what you are looking for.
Well, I wouldn't. I don't know. I wouldn't understand a lot about a person that doesn't like any of those things. I'd be really concerned.
Yeah. Although I will mention they have apparently announced what they're going to replace it with. It was a. Naturally, it was in 30 Thoughts this morning, which will, again, teach me not to miss 30 Thoughts when it comes out. But the challenge is the four-line challenge. Players will try to hit targets in the net from the closest blue line, center ice, the far blue line, and then the opposite goal line. Goalies will be offered the chance to try from the farthest distance with more points available if they can do it. Friedman also reported that the change was as much the players' decision as the league's. So that's the scoop.
Okay. But this was all Fleury's idea. I just want to shoot. I just want to shoot. Guys, I'm going to shoot it. I'm going to shoot it. I'm going to shoot it. It's like, all right.
Well,
all right.
Well,
yeah, it sounds great.
I mean, well,
yeah,
Martin Jones.
Yeah. Martin Jones is not going to be allowed to participate in this challenge. Nope. Sorry. Nope. He is going to be banned from the competition now. Sorry. We've seen your shot, buddy. It's terrible. It's terrible. The worst. It's funny. I was
for anyone who missed it.
It's on
for anyone who missed it, the Sharks.
You're going to have to go check this out. It's
the Sharks were up. What was it? 3 goals on Winnipeg.
Yes.
Yeah, 3 goals on Winnipeg, and Jones winds up seeks glory and instead gets the puck knocked down, and Mark Scheifele scores behind him.
He Mark Scheifele like catches the puck with his glove, drops it to his stick, and then scores. I mean, that's got to be Martin Jones. That's his Luongo moment, right? I mean, really. If we're being honest with ourselves, that's as like, you know, Lou watches that and is like, oh shit, man, that could have been me. Wow.
Yeah.
That's wild. You know,
if you're going to do it, I mean, very smart to try it with the 3-goal deficit. Like even with a 2-goal deficit, you're asking for trouble, but 3 goals, no one is ever going to hold it against you long-term.
No. And plus, you know, with Winnipeg's goalie poll, it doesn't hurt your 5-on-5 save percentage. So, you know, you're in business there also. So. Shoo.
Yes.
And your charts are
that's
saved.
What.
Oh,
Martin Jones
God.
Just. Martin Jones became a shoe-in at the All-Star game because of the wins. I don't think the 5-versus-5 save percentage is going to be an issue for him anytime soon.
Martin Jones got in the All-Star game because of his playoff performance last year. I don't think this season had a damn thing to do about it, to be honest with you.
That's a valid point.
That'd be my hot take on the matter, to be honest. So.
Yeah, although the Pacific goalie class is really weird. Like, it's not one goaltender has kind of stood out from the pack. Like, if Cam Talbot... Peter Budaj,
my hot take is that Peter Budaj has been better than Martin Jones this year. And that's not even a hot take. That's actually, like, you know, a fact.
I think after
today,
tonight,
maybe
they may...
They, yeah,
I think they're probably
tonight.
Tied.
Yeah, but at least when the vote came out, he had been better.
Right, and I don't know. Yeah, I think that's a really good way to think about it, because otherwise, I mean, you think they might try to push for giving the home team an extra guy. But, hey, Jones is still ours, kind of, a little bit. Although he did get some vicious chance from what I heard. So.
Yeah, there's still, which is lame, but whatever, that's not surprising, I guess. There's still time for guys to drop out and, you know, some extra kings to be added, so that's not really, you know.
I want someone to drop out the night before and then just to have them ask Kopitar because he's there.
I feel like it's really good. I legitimately would be really disappointed if Kopitar doesn't get to play in this game. That would be legit. And maybe he doesn't want to play in it. He wants to go on vacation or whatever, but I'd be pretty bummed if he doesn't get to play in this game.
I'm sure he does. I mean, he hasn't had significant time off from hockey since the beginning of September because he was helping Slovenia qualify for the Olympics again because he's a saint, and then went to the World Cup of Hockey and took Europe to the finals because he's a saint. So it's
God bless Team
it's
Europe.
Probably for the best, but
still though, it would be really cool to see him get to, you know, get to participate in this because it feels like he certainly deserves it just based on, you know, even if not this season, but just based on, you know, overall past performance and all that, and get to play in it at home and get recognized. This seems like a great opportunity for him to be able to, you know, to get in there, so to speak, when his team has a little more control over who gets in and who doesn't. But so it is.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, you know, I'm sure if you ask Kopitar, he would say, I don't think I deserve to be there, but that's also what Jonathan Toews said when he was asked, and he will be going anyway. So. Yeah. Yeah, that he is.
No lie there. Yeah. You're right,
so,
Jonathan. You should abdicate.
So I was gonna ask if the Sharks had any snubs, but they got three guys in, so I don't know if at that point
you can
really argue for anybody.
Yeah, I mean, complaining about that would be pretty tacky.
Yeah.
Connor McDavid being named the captain, though, can we complain about that? Screw that guy, right?
I'm more
not
disappointed.
Being sarcastic mostly, but I mean, also, you know, screw that guy anyway.
No, we should have stuffed the ballot box, but he deserves it and everything. But he'll be captain like
forever.
10 more times in his career. Yeah,
I know. At some point, I'm gonna get sick of him. Probably
he has two possible outcomes every year. He has two possible outcomes, which is like broken collarbone or all-star captain. There's no in between.
Burn. That's true.
Yeah.
Yikes. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Hey, he's got Milan up there to protect him. Don't worry. Except they're not playing on the same line anymore. Do you know that? So better look out.
Yeah. Yeah. Apparently, Lucic couldn't cut it. And we're going to take mild satisfaction from that fact and pretend that we didn't wish he was still here.
Who would have guessed that he couldn't cut it on the top line of an NHL team? Wow. Really surprising.
Hey, he was good with Kopitar, but I mean, he also looked better with Kopitar when you're now watching him skate with Trevor Lewis every day. And Trevor Lewis has been the best line mate he's had. Like, that's the worst part of all this. Like, he's been more productive than anybody else with Kopitar this year.
Yeah, I think it has to do more with complementing pieces than anything else, to be honest. I think that McDavid is too fast to be playing with, or Lucic is too slow to be playing with a guy like that. They're just don't play the same kind of game. So, you know, I think Kopitar plays a different kind of game, and so he fits better with Lucic. Lucic is a guy that can go up and, you know, create havoc in front of the net, which opens up space for Kopitar. I mean, David doesn't really want that kind of game. He wants more guys to, you know, where he can go be buzzing around, which is the same kind of game that Lucic plays. McDavid's the disruptor. He doesn't need a disruptor, whereas it'd be like they play the same role. Like, if McDavid played with Kopitar, that would be an incredible line, because McDavid goes and plays disruptor and buzzes around the net, you know, while Kopitar gets all that extra space and slow the game down. You know what I mean? That's the, you know, the perfect line, at least in my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah, Kopitar had a weird
really
game tonight,
Kopitar
actually.
Kopitar and McDavid played really well, played together. That'd probably be really good. That's just my hot take for you. What do you think? They'd probably be okay together.
I hope that they put McDavid and Carter out together and they just skate straight at the defense and the defense cowers. That's what I'm looking for.
Screw Columbus.
McDavid did score in overtime today, by the way, with 2.6 seconds left.
I saw that. Yeah.
Yeah. Not thrilled about Florida blowing that lead late, but.
Yeah, thanks for nothing, guys. Really helpful.
But anyway, Kopitar had a weird game today because we're going eye test here, but like I thought Kopitar was, you know, the only guy that was really able to assert himself in the offensive zone, in the sense that he again, and this is pretty much every night for him, but he wasn't getting taken off the puck. He was able to skate around and find, you know, gaps in the Sharks defense. Whereas a lot of the offense tonight was just sort of, you know, throwing the puck to the net and trying to create traffic. And Kopitar has a way of looking really good. And it's, you know, he has a way of looking good even when he's not winning the possession battle. And tonight, apparently, he did. He was, you know, trailing on that probably because of who he was matched up against. But he looks lethargic and ends up dominating, and then sometimes he looks dominating and is actually kind of falling behind. But Kopitar, as you might expect, because he's only scored, I think, 4 goals this year, has been the epicenter of lots of criticism this year. probably because he's the captain now, and captains have to score 20 goals in the first half of the season or else they get criticized. As someone who has dealt with captaincy changing more than once, how long did it take before Pavelski was sort of seen as, okay, this guy should absolutely be the captain of the Sharks?
That is pretty much immediate, because we went a season without, I think, well, in fairness, we went a season without one.
Right.
And I think it had happened so many times before, you know, there was the, you know, the Marlowe fiasco and the Thornton one and the no captain. I think by that point, you know, most Sharks fans were kind of over it. Honestly, to me at this point, the captaincy literally means nothing. And I think that's kind of the case in the Sharks locker room, if I'm being quite honest. I don't think anyone really cares anymore. And I think that at some point that will be the case almost everywhere. But maybe not ever in Canada.
I think it's the case in LA. Yeah, I think it's the case in LA right now.
Yeah, it's just, it doesn't mean anything. And like, I think you feed off of the players in that regard, you know, and which doesn't mean that there's not like leadership in the locker room. Like, hey, you know, like, hey, Joe Thornton says what he thinks. Joe Pavelski says what he thinks. The guys say what they think. And, you know, they get stuff done in the locker room and, you know, guys take care of themselves, whatever, because, you know, that's what they do. I mean, I don't know what goes on in the locker room. I don't know who's taking charge, who's making sure the guys, you know, I don't know, are showing up to practice on time. That kind of stuff is outside, you know, even as my role as like a, you know, pseudo journalist or whatever. It's not really something that I, even if I was at practices every day, you know, wouldn't really have a great grasp on, no matter how much, you know, I think even the journalists that are there every day like to pretend they have a real good grasp on. It's just not really the way it is. So I think that, you know, better off just not treating it as a really serious thing.
If you're a pseudo journalist, you need to treat it pseudo seriously.
I treat everything pseudo seriously. It's like, whatever. I mean, I think the other thing too is that Joe Pavelski is as boring as a stick of butter. And so it's really hard to take it like, really emotionally. Like, Joe Pavelski has not ever said anything interesting in his entire life. I believe that to be true. Ever. So it's kind of like, oh, yeah, Joe Pavelski is the captain. Yeah, okay. Like, Joe Pavelski
it's an even keel thing.
That is like, he's never said anything that's like gotten like the blood rushing, you know? Not like, oh, man, Joe Pavelski said something really controversial. It's like, oh, yeah, no. Yeah, it's just Joe Pavelski.
Right.
And not to say that Dustin Brown has said anything, but, you know, he's been involved in some, like, you know, some controversial plays or whatever. So, okay, right. And it was, you know, controversial when he got the captaincy stripped away. And now, at the very least, you know, Kopitar, just because he hasn't scored, that's controversial. Or at least, you know, fan frustration. And now Pavelski's continued to score at a great clip for a few years. So, you know, there's no beef. So, there you go.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think there's anything to Kopitar feeling additional pressure. I just think that, you know, and Kopitar's been, you know, he's been getting points lately. It's just today he took zero shots, which is one of the things that's always going to cause a little bit of anguish. But, I mean, he had three assists in his last game against Winnipeg, and then he got sick, and this is his first game back. So it's, I will happily admit that it's very hard for me to be objective about Andre Kopitar, given that I'm staring at his jersey on my wall right now. But the criticism, it's so strange given, as we've talked about, all the things that the Kings have to worry about, that so much of the criticism seems to center on Kopitar. And I don't think that's an LA fan thing either. I think that's just what happens with hockey teams. The center or the captain. And maybe that's the mysterious captain's role that we've all been missing this whole time, is that the captain just absorbs criticism and lets other people do their thing.
Here's my hot Andre Kopitar take. This year, he's got a 0.53 assists per game. His career average is 0.57, so that's pretty much right on the money. He's a But his big dip, 0.11 goals per game. His career average is 0.31. His career average shooting percentage is 12.1%. He's shooting 5.1%. So, you know, my guess is just that he's been really unlucky. He's averaging 2.05 shots per game. His career average is 2.54. So he's not even shooting that much less. It's just, you know, they're just not going in. So,
Fine. Yeah. I'll ask a fun question. Off the top of your head, what do you think Joe Thornton's career shooting percentage is?
6.9%. I don't know. It's probably something like 8%.
With the Sharks, it is 13%.
Wow. I can't believe it's that high.
And with Boston, it was 15.3, which is maybe a little surprising. But, yeah, and that was, you know, different time. But, yeah, I mean, Thornton this year, he's shooting 6.4%. He's only got 3 goals, of course. But I didn't realize he had 19 goals last year. Jeez. But he
– all 3 of those goals this year, by
shot
the way,
below,
have all been empty nets. All of them.
You're kidding.
No. Literally all of them have been on empty nets.
That's remarkable. I thought
a crazy low despite all of his goals coming on empty nets. That's actually remarkable.
Yeah, Thornton might have gotten a piece of Burns' shot today from where I was sitting, and I was thinking, oh no, if we gave up a goal to Joe Thornton, this is not going to go well. But
no, that was
a loss.
19th of the season. Yeah.
Yeah. Off Kopitar's skate, so.
Kopitar gets an assist.
Mm-hmm. His 21st assist of the season, it would appear.
Right. Right, exactly. Thornton went on a crazy hot streak near the end of last season and ended up being a point to game player last year. Like the power play just went on fire near the end of the year. And so, ended up being, you know, having a crazy high point total. So there you go.
Yeah. He does have more points than Kopitar this year, but I think, that's pretty much because he's played more games. I think they are scoring at almost exactly the same rate. So there you go. They've once again, Thornton and Kopitar linked in history.
Yeah, I mean, his points have definitely been down quite a bit this year, given that, you know, most of his points come from assists and the fact that the Sharks have not scored very much, you know, guess what? Well, there you go. Points coming from assists.
Yeah, and that was
guys
kind of interesting.
And there you go.
Yeah, that's kind of interesting when I was looking at, you know, the team stats before today's game, just how similar the Kings and the Sharks are in terms of pure goal-scoring numbers. Like, the power plays are almost identical percentages in that they're not very good. The penalty kills are both quite strong. The defenses are both excellent. The offenses have both been kind of sagging this year. And clearly they get to wherever they are by completely different means. But with Jones and Budaj performing almost the same, they're really not, I mean, they're different teams that have been performing almost exactly the same, although now the Sharks have an 8-point lead on the Kings.
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest thing is that the Sharks have been more... I think the biggest difference to me, anyway, is that the Sharks have been unlucky with their shooting percentage. Well, I feel like the Kings, their shooting percentage is more reflective of who they are as a team. Because I feel like the Kings have less good... their score... And I think the other difference is that the Sharks have been luckier with their good defense, while the Kings are a better defensive team, at least in terms of forward defense. I think the Sharks have a very good defensive group. Maybe not as good up top. Like, I think the Kings' top four is better than the Sharks' top four. But, you know, depth-wise, maybe the Sharks are better, you know, for whatever that's worth. But the Kings are a better defensive team in their forward group than the Sharks are. So I think, like, if you were to look like the Sharks' goals against per 60 or whatever, the Kings, I think, are better in that department than the Kings are. Or vice versa, Kings are better than the Sharks are. Anyway, I think that it's just like, you know, that's the difference. The Kings are so a better defensive team. The Sharks are a better offensive team. But, yeah, the luck has just kind of run in opposite directions. You know, I think as much as I think that the Sharks are a little bit better than the Kings this year, you know, we've talked about through five games, you know, if this was a seven-game series, we'd be talking about playing game six, you know, tomorrow night. You know, and two of those these games have gone to overtime. So it's still just as close as it's been, you know, through literally all of these series going all the way back to 2011. You know, I mean, the only the only series that haven't been close to that 2011 series and then the series last year. And then by not close, I mean just that they only went to five games. And, you know, those series also featured, you know, some overtime games. So pretty wild.
Yeah,
these have been. I know those two five-game series really aren't even indicative of how close the games were.
Yeah, although I think the 2016 was probably the most lopsided. Like 2011, I think the Kings lost three of those games in overtime.
Correct.
But there isn't a single person I think in LA who would tell you that the Kings deserve to win more than one game against San Jose in last season. And you know
that's probably
that was. You know, Alec Martinez hurt, Andre Kopitar skating in half speed. Like there were a lot of issues last year, but I don't know. I hate playing against the Sharks more than against any other team because even it still feels inevitable that like bad things are going to happen, which is crazy to me considering the history of the rivalry. But if you ask someone based on you know, reflection of how many points the Kings deserve to get out of the games that they played against the Sharks this year. You know, you wouldn't think that they should have even won two of the games, but they played really well. I think it was New Year's Eve, the game before this. It's just, you remember how it started and how it ended. And you remember that the Sharks just beat the Kings in openers and then won the playoff series last year and then finished out the season series tonight. So, I don't know. I think it's a reactionary kind of thing, but yeah, I think the Sharks, if I bet on either the Sharks or the Kings to make noise in the playoffs, I probably do put my money on the Sharks, but I don't think it's a done deal by any means.
Yeah. I mean, I think the biggest thing to me is that the Sharks look a lot better than I think the Kings did. And the Sharks are missing two really, really important players and one key depth player, while the Kings are missing one really important player. And that's the biggest difference. But the fact of the matter is that we still got the whole trade deadline to see what happens. And so I think the biggest thing to me is that we could be talking about a situation where both these teams enter the playoffs, you know, in a few months with maybe not like markedly different teams than they had entering the season, but, you know, definitely different depending on what they do at the trade deadline.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even adding just one piece could really change how these teams look. You know, if the Kings add one score or if the Sharks add one depth piece, you know, that could make a really big difference as far as giving an edge up against, you know, really any team one way or another. So, you know, that's something kind of interesting at least to think about moving forward.
And how do you think the Sharks match up against Edmonton and Anaheim? If we're talking about Pacific Division teams that are going to do well in March and April.
Yeah, I mean, to me, neither of those teams are I don't find either of them particularly scary. I guess Anaheim a little bit more so, just because I think that they have more experience and a little bit more, you know, skilled players. But, you know, if I have to choose between, I don't know. I guess the thing is, like, if I have to choose between taking on, you know, the skilled players that Anaheim has or the lack of experience and, you know, really good players that Edmonton has, I'd rather take on Edmonton right now. But at the end of the day, I'm not really all that worried about taking on Randy Carlyle or taking on, you know, the kind of thin depth that Edmonton has. I think the Sharks should be able to handle either of those teams theoretically. So the Western Conference is not very scary because even once you get out of the Pacific, I mean, Chicago is really not very good. Minnesota is not very good, despite what I think Bruce Boudreau deserves a ton of credit for what he's, you know, gotten that team to do this year. But I still don't think it's a very good team. You know, the possession numbers are terrible. And St. Louis is a decent team, but not great. So, you know, it's still a wide open
year.
Yeah.
And St. Louis can't figure out their goaltending right now. And that's like,
right.
That's my biggest concern with LA too, is if Peter Budaj does falter, like that's, you know, you pretty much are kissing goodbye to the Kings season at this point. Like it's, you know, the Kings, they're still a good possession team and they still have scoring, whatever. But like 3 years ago, they were able to make the playoffs, even though Quick put up like a 903 or something save percentage. And it was a shortened season, but I can't imagine what would have happened this year if the Kings were putting up a 900 save percentage like St. Louis is rolling with. It's just it the Kings would be where, you know, I don't know, maybe not Arizona is, but they'd be at least, you know, 5, 6, 8 points out of that playoff spot. And then we're talking about trading pieces and rebuilding. So it's a fine line.
Yep, no kidding. Yeah, right, exactly. And especially with the expansion draft looming, it'd be a lot tougher to sell this year, I think, than it would be in any other year, which is what makes it a little bit scarier to be in a situation like that, I think. But I don't know, maybe at the same time, maybe it wouldn't be if they're, because the Kings do have some expiring contracts, so I guess if it push comes to shove, you know, it wouldn't be the absolute end of the world. But obviously,
right. But yeah,
I don't think it's going to come to that either. So you know, that's not a road we have to go down. Obviously, so
yeah I'm just it's going to be fascinating to see if Vancouver decides that the team that is carrying a minus 18 goal differential is a playoff team and stands pat or tries to improve. They're the fun one in the Pacific for me.
I honestly, that team is so, it's really something, man. That is such a weird team. You know, and I last year, while I disagreed, obviously, with everything they did, I understood that what their thought process was, that they were worried that they wouldn't, you know, sell tickets if they tanked. And now they're not selling tickets and they're not tanking. And it's like, yeah, so now what's the plan, kiddos? And it's like, well, I don't know what their plan is.
The plan is to sneak in as the last seed in the Western Conference and go to a Stanley Cup. That's the master plan now for all those teams.
Right. What was Louis Erickson thinking signing there? Except for getting a hugely crazy contract, I guess. If that was the plan.
I think that was the plan. I think that was the entire plan and nothing but the plan.
That's a great plan. I should sign up for that plan. Great plan.
Vancouver is a beautiful city. I can't begrudge him that.
I've heard it's great. I'm sure it's lovely this time of year. What are the weather's like in Vancouver at this time? I'm sure it's it's pretty nice right now. Wow. Yeah, it's actually not bad. Only 46 degrees in Vancouver right now. No, not bad.
Oh, that's beautiful.
I mean,
yeah, it rained in LA today. I mean,
yeah. That's only 6 degrees cooler than it is in LA right now. So there you go.
Yeah.
Louis Erickson.
I just feel bad for Louis Erickson that he doesn't get to be the most underrated player in the NHL anymore.
No. Still
Mark
Edward Vlasic.
He held on that title for a very long time.
According to Mark Edward Vlasic.
You think it is Mark Edward Vlasic?
Mark Edward Vlasic thinks it's Mark Edward Vlasic. I don't think it is. I don't know.
Oh.
He would be the first person to tell you it's him.
I think he's underrated, but that's because he plays in California more than anything. And
who is
he
the
also
most underrated player in the NHL? Matthew Tkachuk. I think he has 15 points against the Sharks in 2 games this year. It feels like it anyway.
That would
Calgary Flames right winger or something. He's he's good.
I mean, if you're a rookie playing in Canada and you're not
Brandon
Toronto.
Oh, nice. Good one. It sure is not Brandon Sutter. He's a cornerstone of the Canucks franchise.
How long is he signed for?
Let's see. According to Cap Friendly, he is signed until 2021. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 years. It's a bargain.
Oh, goodness.
Wow. Don't worry. He's got a no trade clause.
That's Sutter Blood. Yeah.
Wow. That's so bad. So.
All right. Well,
wow.
We are winding down here. I think we got a hard 4 minutes left. So.
Okay.
I'm out of things to talk about, but I think we will be podcasting on or around the All-Star game, which is only 8 days away, 7 days away.
Oh boy.
No, nine, ten. I don't know. Next Sunday. Sunday.
Yep.
January
29th. A week from Sunday. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I can't wait.
Yeah, I'm excited. The Staples, the street outside Staples Center has been fenced off now, which made it for a weird setting walking into the game today. But they are already preparing hard for the fan fest. It starts on Thursday, actually, which maybe that's what they usually do. But I'm gonna crash it during work. I think during lunch.
Is this a Was this the last home
we're
game
doing
for
work.
The Kings before the game?
Yeah, it was. They have five games on the road. They come back for the All-Star game and one home game immediately after the All-Star game, and then they go back on the road for another four games. So it's
wow.
Yeah, it's the annual Grammy road trip. The Grammys, in this case, are February 12th, so they pretty much are turning it around, I think, immediately after the All-Star game is over.
Yikes.
Yeah,
okay.
Speaking of weird schedules, the number of like long homestands and long road trips for the Kings, it's just been, like, I think they had a 9-game road trip and now a 7-game homestand, and now they're having a 9 out of 10 on the road, and then in March they have a 7-game homestand, and it's, yeah, all over the place. But it feels like they missed a chance at this homestand to at least get themselves into a decent position. So that's, I think, a lot of where the gloom and doom is coming from, is that they played 7 home games and got 6 points out of it.
It's not very many points. It's not. But they had one, two. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I, for one, I'm feeling so much better after this podcast, just about everything. So,
you know what, me too.
Well, I'm glad you feel good and you're comfortable. Where are you in the Pacific? Higher than us.
I was going to say Fontana. Oh, I'm in third. But the Sharks are in third. I'm nowhere. I don't get
you're nowhere.
The team. So, I'm not an employee of the San Jose Sharks. I'd feel a lot better, I guess, if I was. I mean, theoretically.
You know what I meant. Although, if the Sharks win their two games in hand, they're in first. And they had the best goal differential in the division. So.
Yeah. It's not terrible. Nope.
They play crappy teams
coming up. So, yeah, it's fine.
Yeah, well, enjoy your optimism. The Sharks deserve it. They did play very well tonight, and the Kings will continue looking for answers. But in the meantime, we're wrapping up here, so we will wait less time for our next JewelCast because of the All-Star game coming up. We'll have a 22 report on that front between the NHL 100 and the All-Star game and the new and improved skills competition. So thanks again for jumping on, Jake, and we'll talk soon.
Yeah, we'll talk to you on. I'll see you on Saturday.
Yeah.
Saturday.
Can't wait.
I also can't wait.